The Sports Report is brought to you by iHome, the number one brand in digital audio. From Lightning Dock alarm clocks to rechargeable Bluetooth boomboxes and quality affordable headphones, iHome has you covered. To learn more, head to iHomeAudio.com. Welcome to episode number 428 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv. New shows every Monday on The Grizz. The show is also free in the podcast section of iTunes, and you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at TheSportsRPT. That's my handle on Twitter, TheSportsRPT. Just another way for you to interact with the show. A lot of topics to get to. The Rio Olympic Games are just days away. If you make a checklist of pluses and minuses, like if you're buying a car or buying a house, it seems like when we talk about the Summer Games, the minus column is overflowing, and there's not a whole heck of a lot in the plus column. The latest news concerns the water, and let's just say it's not good. I'll have more on that. Major League Baseball trade deadline is here. Some media bobbleheads seem shocked that the Yankees are sellers. Not me. I've said it for weeks. This is what they should do. This is what they need to do. Continue the rebuilding process in the Bronx. They're 52-52. They are not a serious contender, and that is coming from a diehard Yankees fan. The Indians added a big-time reliever but could not reel in a new catcher. I'll explain why and run down the recent deals. The fourth major is in the books, and we have another first-time champ, 4-for-4 this year. The PGA Championship got interesting late on Sunday, and I must admit, maybe it says something about my immaturity, but the fans who repeatedly yelled, "Dynamite," they cracked me up every time. It was definitely a good time for Jimmy Walker. And for the young bucks out there, Google JJ and Good Times, a classic TV show from the mid to late 70s. Big golf segment coming up. This is episode 428 of the Sports Report. I'm Paul Roberts. Thanks so much for tuning in. Just got back from a little vacation. Was down in Richmond, Virginia. Had a blast down there. It is birthday palooza in my household in late July. We celebrate 4 birthdays in the span of 7 days. 4 in 1 week. My sister starts it off on the 23rd, my twin brother and I are on the 27th, and then my mom on the 29th. My brother went to University of Richmond. He lives down there. Cool city. Got to meet some of his friends. The craft beer industry has exploded there as it has all across the country. So that was a good time. Our aunt and uncle live down there. Their son and daughter live there, and their families are in Richmond. So we got everybody together. A really, really fun time down there. I got a good card from my brother as well. I'll read it to you real quick. It says, "How many beers does it take to have a happy birthday?" Again, how many beers does it take to have a happy birthday? You open it up, there's a picture of 3 different pint glasses, and it says, "Enjoy the research." I certainly will. So I get back from vacation just in time to see a story about Draymond Green taking a picture of his, you know what, and posting it on social media. What? Green said, and I quote, "I kinda hit the wrong button." Kinda? Like Mount Everest is kinda tall, or the Sahara Desert is kinda dry, or the sun is kinda hot, or maybe Tom Brady is kind of a good football player? Kinda? No, Draymond, you did hit the wrong button. Green said it was supposed to be a private message on Snapchat. Oops. The picture was up for about 10 minutes on Sunday. Draymond Green is a great basketball player. He's a triple-double waiting to happen. He plays the game hard, plays the right way. He's a fierce competitor. can play multiple positions. All right, we all know about him as a basketball player. But as far as a decision maker, he's kind of bad. I'm not going to get into that story too much more. Now, as for the Olympics, I've always enjoyed the summer games more than the winter games. I'm not a skier. It's just a personal preference. I'm a hoops junkie. You know that. Love watching basketball. I used to swim and play water polo, so I'll follow those sports. I'll tune into some soccer, tennis, boxing, volleyball. I enjoy the Summer Olympics. But, and this is a fat Albert-sized but, we haven't heard a whole lot of positives coming out of Rio, have we? To recap, the Zika virus has been all over the news. I mean, it's up there with Trump and Hillary. Some of the world's top athletes, including the best men's golfers, are not going because of it. I'll run down that list in a little bit. There are issues with the village. It's not ready yet. There are electrical and plumbing problems in the Olympic Village. And Australia's team is staying in hotels because they don't feel the village is safe. Human body parts were discovered on a beach right in front of the volleyball site. Just washed on up there. Human body parts. There's also an area called Crackland, and you can read more about this in USA Today. It's a mile from where the opening ceremony is going to be held. People are doing crack right out in public. Huge, huge problem in Brazil. And then, of course, the water. And the AP, Associated Press, did a 16-month-long study. All right, so more than a year. The results are terrible. The water pollution is awful there. The test revealed consistent and dangerously high levels of viruses. The initial results, which were released more than a year ago, showed viral levels up to 1.7 million times what would be considered troublesome here in the U.S. And antibiotics fight bacteria. They don't fight viruses. So I know a lot of the athletes are loading up on antibiotics. Doesn't help you with a virus. Dr. Valerie Hardwood is the department chair of biology at South Florida. She said visitors should not put their heads under the water. That's how bad this is. She added that swimmers risk getting violently ill. Babies and young kids even more at risk. You can read more about this on ESPN.com. The worst spots are at the rowing and the sailing sites. I mean, you can see the sludge, the black color, brown color, you know, looks like tar, some spots in the water down there. So there have just been a lot of negative stories about what's happening down in Rio. Now, we've had similar instances of this with other Olympic Games, and they turned out to be much ado about nothing. I hope that is the case with Rio, but man, does it sound bad there. And it's not just one thing. You know, at first it was about Zika and that virus, but then we hear about these human body parts, the Olympic Village isn't ready, Crackland, the water is horrible. So I ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most concerned, 1 you're not concerned at all, how worried are you about these issues in Brazil? Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, Adam Scott, Brandon Grace, and other top golfers are not even going, and some other athletes as well. So let me know what you think on Twitter. How concerned are you about the problems in Rio? I'm on Twitter at TheSportsRPT, TheSportsRPT on Twitter. Today's show brought to you by our great sponsor, and that is iHome. iHome has a new weather-tough line of Bluetooth speakers. Listen how tough these things are. Waterproof, rust-proof, and military-standard shock-proof. From Bluetooth and docking clock radios to portable wireless speakers, iHome has it all, and iHome combines great value with exceptional quality. iHome offers a full line of headphones and earbuds for the fitness guru, the traveler, or just for hanging out at home and relaxing. So go to the website, iHomeAudio.com, take a look at all of their great products. You can check out their apps, their accessories. iHome's also the number one brand in digital speakers. The sound quality can't be beat. It's going to sound really, really sharp and look cool too. The website again, iHomeAudio.com, and be sure to look at that new line of Bluetooth speakers. Back on episode number 428 of the Sports Report, I'm Paul Roberts here on GrizzlyProductions.tv and, of course, in the podcast section of iTunes. This show and all the previous shows are free there, so you can go back, check them out if you're on vacation, just busy around the house with the kids, you're down at the beach, you missed a show or two, you can go back and listen to them on iTunes or on the Grizz. Baseball fans like myself love this time of year. Rumors are swirling, especially now with the explosion of social media. Facebook, Twitter, blogs, just ask Draymond Green. He'll tell you about that. It is a long season. So the trade deadline breaks up the monotony, adds some excitement. Teams looking for that piece here or there that could put them over the top, looking for a division title, maybe just a wild card berth. And now that you have the two wild cards in each division, you know, say what you want about Major League Baseball. That was a great decision. A lot more teams in it. A lot more fan bases interested now. The Yankees had some really, really good arms in their bullpen, and they decided to unload. They shipped Aroldis Chapman to the Cubs and Andrew Miller to the Indians. New York got youngsters Gleyber Torres, who's a shortstop, a teenager, an outfielder, Billy McKinney from Chicago. As far as Cleveland, they got another outfielder, Clint Frazier, and a lefty, Justice Sheffield, who is Gary Sheffield's nephew. They were both former first-round picks. I think selling is the right move by the Yankees, and this is not a new opinion. I've stuck by this for weeks now. They're a 500 club in a very deep division. You have Baltimore, you have Toronto, you have Boston. Those three teams are separated by 1.5 games. Now look at the lineups for those teams and then look at the Yankees. And it's not close. And again, I'm a big-time Yankees fan. It's not close. Look at what the Yankees do with runners in scoring position. Jeez, we all know the Yankees have to get younger. And this was not the time to make a panic move and add payroll. It wasn't. This was a time to take advantage of your assets, and that was the bullpen. Chapman is going to be a free agent. So if the Yankees really, really want to try and bring him back for next year, they can do it. Now he's going to demand a boatload of cash, but he will be a free agent. Plus, they still have Dellin Betances, who's only 28. His stuff is nasty. Listen to these numbers. 89 strikeouts in 50 innings. I mean, that is ridiculous. That's just sick. He's been all-star three consecutive seasons. The Yankees did go out and acquire Tyler Clippard from Arizona on Sunday. Former closer in Washington, had 32 saves back in 2012. He was a closer, he was a setup guy. It's good for the Nationals. Struggled this year with the Diamondbacks. ERA of 4.3, 7 home runs in 37 innings. Got to keep the ball in the ballpark there. He's 31 years old, so he'll be the setup guy. Now, I also understand why the Cubs and Indians made these trades. They are in win-now mode. The time is now for teams like this. There's no question about it. They're not waiting for tomorrow or 2018, 2019. It's about now. Cleveland has the best record in the American League at 60-42. Chicago has the best record in the National League at 63-41. They got a wild 12-inning victory over Seattle Sunday night. Joe Maddon was up to his old tricks again. I mean, it's like Little League Baseball with this guy. putting people at different positions. Terry Francona and his players were thrilled with getting Miller from the Yankees. He joins Cody Allen and Brian Shaw in the bullpen. Miller's 6-1, 1.39 ERA. He's averaging 15 strikeouts per nine innings. That is the career number for Chapman. So when you're in that neighborhood, you are pretty darn good. The Indians starting rotation, I've talked about it a lot. It's one of the best in baseball, and now you bring in a high-quality bullpen piece. I think it's a great move. However, Cleveland could not get catcher Jonathan Lucroy from Milwaukee. They were one of eight teams on his no-trade list. He's hitting 300, 13 homers, 50 RBIs. He's not making a whole lot of money. Cleveland catcher Yan Gomes is on the DL, and he hasn't hit a lick this season, so that would have made sense. The Orioles lineup is like a beer league softball team. I mean, they just flat-out mash, and that bullpen is filthy. The question mark is the rotation. So they traded for left-hander Wade Miley from Seattle. He hasn't been great this year, but he really improved in July. He's going to be 30 in November. Had a couple good years with Arizona. In fact, won 16 games in 2012, was an all-star then. Went to Boston last year, 11-11, 4.5 ERA. Kind of a disappointment, as much of that staff was. And he had an ERA of 5 with the Mariners this season. But again, had been better of late. He's an innings eater. The Orioles gave up 27-year-old Cuban lefty Ariel Miranda, who has spent most of the year in AAA, but Seattle feels like he is Major League ready. So the Orioles get a starter. The Nationals desperately needed bullpen help with Jonathan Papelbon getting roughed up. Washington traded for three-time All-Star closer Mark Melancon from Pittsburgh. He had 51 saves last season. He's got 30 this year and an ERA of 1.5. He has been outstanding for the Pirates. I think if he played in a bigger market, he might even get more attention. He is 31. He's going to be a free agent, so Pittsburgh wasn't going to pay him big bucks. They're always watching the payroll there in the Steel City. So they decide to trade him now and get something as opposed to nothing. They get back Taylor Hearn, who's a 21-year-old left-handed pitcher. Washington had to do something for the bullpen, and this was a big, big pickup for the Nationals. They're 61-44, tied with San Francisco for the second-best record in the National League. When you lose games ninth inning, I mean, it's a backbreaker. And it can have that carryover effect. You can actually lose two games in one night because it can carry over to the next day. So they needed to help out the bullpen there. As for the Giants, who have struggled lately, Hunter Pence was activated off the DL. And I think that's a big, big addition to that lineup. They've had good starting pitching. You know about Bumgarner. You know about Cueto, Samardzija. They need to hit, and they've been really, really banged up. You know, three regulars have been out of the lineup there with Panic and Duffy and Pence, so now they get Pence back. That should help the Giants. So let's go from San Fran to San Diego. The Padres have been wheeling and dealing, like Monty Hall on Let's Make a Deal. Remember that game show? Again, you young bucks, you're going to have to Google this. That was a classic game show. And he had that thin, long microphone that you don't see anymore. Oh, man. The Padres sent two of their starters. Not quite as good as Press Your Luck. I will say that. My all-time favorite game show with the whammies, the big bucks. Peter Tamarkin was the host. I would put that above Let's Make a Deal if I was ranking game shows. But still liked it. Padres sent two of their starters, Andrew Cashner and Colin Ray, to the Marlins. Cashner had to trim that beard. I wonder in the summer, and you see this down south now too, but a lot of the youngsters, you know, the skinny jeans, they're growing the beards. Isn't that hot in July? Now we're into August. I mean, I don't know, after a few days, and I could grow a beard in no time. In a week, I could have a beard, but it just seems like it's not comfortable, especially in the summertime. But Cashner had that Grizzly Adams look going, so he had to shave that. He throws hard, no question about that. He was really good 2013, 2014. In fact, in 2014, he had an ERA of 2.5 in 19 starts. Hasn't been as good the last two seasons. This year, 4-7 with a 4.76 ERA. Miami's rotation outside of Jose Fernandez, who was a flat-out stud, one of the best in the game, the rest of the guys, they've been mediocre. And the lefty Wei-Yin Chen, he's on the disabled list now, so this gives them some depth. As part of the seven-player deal, San Diego gets a 19-year-old first baseman named Josh Naylor, who has power. He was a first-rounder last year. Padres also made a trade with Atlanta. Matt Kemp goes to the Braves for Hector Oliveira. Kemp has some pop, but he doesn't steal bases anymore. He does not have a good on-base percentage. He's going to be 32 in September. Also makes a ton of money. He's not close to the player he once was. I mean, he used to be an MVP candidate. He was runner-up 1 year. The Braves have been trying to ditch Oliveira for a while. He was suspended 82 games for domestic violence. He's 31. He signed through 2020. So we're looking at a swap here of bad contracts. He switched from a third baseman to an outfielder, bad defensive player. So another move there with San Diego. Who do you think, big picture, are the biggest winners and losers of the Major League Baseball trade deadline? I mean, some big arms in the bullpen got dealt. Chapman to the Cubs, Miller goes. You look at what Washington does with Melanson. So who are the biggest winners and losers at the trade deadline? And I would still consider the Yankees a winner considering all the prospects that they got back. I know some of the players, Betances was upset that Miller is gone. I think people knew Chapman would go, but he's going to be a free agent. Miller's locked up. He does make a lot of money, but it seemed like some of the Yankees players were frustrated about that. And, you know, Girardi comes out saying we're not waving the white flag. We never do that here in the Bronx. But, you know, they realize what these moves are. I mean, that bullpen was locked down. Now you get rid of two of the three guys. And yes, Clippard's in there, but he's not the caliber player of a Miller or a Chapman. No question about that. But I would still say Yankees are a winner. Who are your biggest winners and losers? Let me know on Twitter. I'm at the Sports RPT, the Sports RPT on Twitter. And keep those five-star reviews coming in the podcast section of iTunes. For those of you who listen there, always appreciate that. We're marching on episode 428 of the Sports Report podcast with you every Monday here on the Grizz and the iTunes. Mother Nature was the big winner for most of the PGA Championship. Fortunately, the rain held off at Baltusrol on Sunday in Springfield, New Jersey. 10 players had to get through 36 holes on Sunday. It was a 12-hour day of golf. The good news is the tournament did finish yesterday. It was getting dark out, and if there would have been a playoff, they would have had to wait until Monday. Wasn't necessary in the end, which is a good thing. The early buzz surrounded Jimmy Walker and Robert Streb. We know no one has ever shot a 62 in a major, but it feels like it's coming, doesn't it? Streb posted a 63 on Friday. That was the third round of 63 in a major in a little over 2 weeks. Phil Mickelson and Henrik Stenson, of course, both did it at the British Open. Phil in the first round and Stenson in his final round at Royal Troon. Streb was close to the record, no cigar. He and Walker were tied for the lead at 9-under through two rounds. Walker shot a first-round 65 to move to the top of the leaderboard, and that's where the 37-year-old from Texas would stay. Walker and Streb, who's a 29-year-old from Oklahoma, tied the 36-hole record at the PGA Championship with total scores of 131. So they were playing really, really well. Not household names to the average Joe sports fan, but good golfers. The question was, could they keep it up? Neither had seriously contended before for a major championship. And Jason Day, the world's number one ranked player, was lurking at 7 under, just 2 shots back after he had a second round 65. Stenson was consistent as usual, back-to-back 67s. He was 6 under, 3 shots back. Patrick Reed, Brooks Koepka, Martin Kaymer were 4 behind. Rory McIlroy, Sergio Garcia, and Dustin Johnson did not even make the cut. DJ was +9. He shot a first-round 77. Rory was +3, just missed the cut by a stroke, and Sergio was +5. To Saturday, thunderstorms created a muddy mess at Baltus Roll. Only 37 players were able to complete the third round, which meant starting at 7 a.m. on Sunday for a marathon day of golf. Streb struggled with a third round of 2 over 72, but Walker and Day were solid with a 68 and 67, respectively. Stenson wound up with his third straight round of 67, and Koepka was even better with a 66. So, heading into the final round, Walker was 11 under, Day 10 under, and Stenson and Koepka were tied for third at -9, just 2 shots back. So it was still anybody's game. Walker, who at one time was ranked number 10 in the world, came into this tournament at number 48. It definitely slipped. 5 career wins, no majors. Despite never capturing a major, he looked extremely confident on Sunday for that final round. Very composed, never seemed rattled. He became a par machine and was able to sprinkle in just a few birdies on the back nine after none on the front nine, his final round. The shot of the tournament may have been on number 10. He found a bunker, but he holed it from 45 feet away from birdie. Just an amazing bunker shot. And then Walker came right back with a 30-foot birdie putt on number 11. Huge momentum boost there in a span of just 2 holes. Day started slow, bogeys on number 1 and number 3, struggled with his driver at times, consistently left himself with very long birdie putts on the back 9, so he kept 2-putting for par. Outside of a birdie on the 11th, Day parred every hole until number 18. His birdie putt on 17 never broke, and I thought that was a big opportunity there to put some heat on Walker. Instead, he stayed at 11 under, 2 shots behind. I heard some media bobbleheads out there flapping at the gums, going on and on about this tremendous duel between Day and Walker. Really? Were they watching the same event that I was watching it? I mean, it wasn't like they were going back and forth. Walker was able to maintain a 2-shot lead for almost the entire back 9. I mean, it wasn't until 18 that things really started to get interesting there. So I don't agree with this great duel. Yes, it got really interesting late, but I never thought the Day truly threatened Walker. And again, that's a credit to Walker. You have the number one player behind you, but he was calm. He was collected. Let's go to 17 first, the par 5. Walker had an 8-footer for birdie. He backed off of it twice, and there was a huge roar from the gallery when Day's 2-iron landed 15 feet away from the hole on the 18th, giving him a shot at eagle. So crowd's going nuts. Walker stood his ground and sank his left-to-right putt, not without some oohs and ahs. There was some trepidation there. His putt just whipped in to put him at minus 14. So now he is 3 shots ahead of Jason Day. Gigantic putt. Almost missed it. And then the tension would have gone through the roof, but it lipped in for him. So as Day's walking to the 18th green, he looks at the leaderboard as they're changing the scores, and he sees minus 14 for Walker, which led him to flip his club in the air in frustration. He knew that the lead was now at 3, not 2. Day did make his eagle putt. Great stroke. He got to 13 under with the final round of 67. So he's 1 shot back, but Walker just needed a par on that final hole to earn his first major championship. And I say just needed a par, obviously not that easy, but the way he was playing, I mean, keep in mind, his last bogey was at number 8 during the third round, not the final round, during the third round. That 27 holes without a bogey as he approached 18. Then a little bit of a twist. Walker chose a 3-wood, went for the green as opposed to laying up. The CBS announcers really, really questioned his club choice there. They couldn't believe it. And maybe they were right. And maybe Walker should have been more conservative there, not go for the pin, because he wound up in the rough to the right of the green. Fans were right behind him. He was able to pitch out to about 35 feet, and a 2-putt was all he needed. His first putt rolled by the hole, but was within 3 feet, and he calmly made the par putt. Final round, 67, and we had yet another first-time major champion. 4 for 4 this year. Walker made that 3-footer look like a piece of cake. I mean, it looked like a Sunday stroll through the park. He didn't take much time at all. Just went up there, calmly nailed it. Very impressive round. The bunker shot on 10 and the birdie on number 17 stood out to me. What a great putt that was. So Day, the defending champ, finishes 13 under, one shot back. The slow start to his final round hurt with the 2 bogeys. However, only 14 golfers made the cut at all 4 majors this year, and Day is one of them, which speaks to just how good he is. And there's no doubt in my mind that he's going to win multiple majors in the future. No doubt. Great sportsmanship shown by Day, as well as Jordan Spieth and Ricky Fowler, who greeted Walker at the end of his final round. These young guys really like Walker. They hang out together a lot. It's pretty cool. As for the rest of the leaderboard at the 98th PGA Championship, Daniel Summerhays shot 66 to finish in third at 10 under. Koepka, Brandon Grace, and Hideki Matsuyama tied for fourth at 9 under. Streb and Stenson, as well as Keimer, tied for 7th at 8 under. Stenson had a bit of a meltdown on number 15 with a double bogey 6, and that took the British Open champ out of contention. He also missed a very makeable birdie putt on 17, and his approach on 18 sailed over the green, settled for par there, finished with a 71, so not a great final round for Stenson. He putted so well at the British Open, that did not happen at Baltusrol. Other notables, Spieth was 6 under, along with Patrick Reed. Phil was 3 under, tied for 33rd. He went out with back-to-back rounds of 68. The triple bogey 7 on number 1 in his second round will be one that he will not forget for a long, long time. His tee shot was hooked so far to the left that it ended up rolling down Shunpike Road. Phil was just disgusted. He played well after that, but geez, it's tough to start with a 7. The big story, Jimmy Walker. No bogeys over his last 28 holes. His 14 under was just one shot off of David Thom's record, which was set in the 2001 PGA Championship. And not only does Walker win his first major, he moves all the way from number 29 to number 4 in the Ryder Cup standings. It got exciting late, but Walker was the best overall. He went wire to wire, a deserving champion. Seems like a good guy. Other players like him. So he joins Danny Willett, Stenson, and Dustin Johnson as first-time major champs. First time that that has happened. First time there's been a clean sweep since 2011. And that points to the depth that's on the tour right now. A lot of really good players, and a lot of these guys are in their 20s. Question for you, do you miss Tiger at all? I mean, you have Day, you have Spieth, you have Rory, you have Sergio still looking for his first major, you have Phil. I mean, a lot of good players out there, obviously Stenson, but do you miss Tiger? I've always thought that for the average sports fan, he adds to the interest level. I mean, and the ratings show that. You'll see a rating spike if he's in the mix. So I hope he's healthy, and I hope he's back ready to play in 2017 in these majors. Now, I'm not saying, you know, these other players aren't great. I'm just saying that he adds something to the tournaments, especially the majors. You can respond on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. You want to talk about the baseball trade deadline, the Rio games, Draymond Green. Just keep it clean on there. This is a family show. At least sometimes it is. Let me know what you think on Twitter at TheSportsRPT. TheSportsRPT. That'll do it for episode number 428. Have a great week, everybody. I'm Paul Roberts on GrizzlyProductions.tv and iTunes.